everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. This is the episode of our weekly shows where we talk about SmackDown, a show that used to be really good, so Jinder Mahal got involved. I am Kenny, joined as always by Sondra. Sondra is barely awake, but she's here. Hi, Sondra.
Hi.
Can you tell people what happened when the Skype call came through, please?
Okay, so I was supposed to be up like an hour ago to record with Kenny. I didn't get to bed until after 4 a.m. because I didn't get home until, you know, after 11, had to make myself dinner. Then I had to watch SmackDown, which took longer than it should because I kept having to pause to, like, stand up and make myself more food or get a drink or whatever so that I would stay awake during the show because I was just exhausted yesterday. All I wanted to do was go to bed early, which, like, going to bed at 1 would be early for me. But I just really wanted to be in my bed, and I was watching SmackDown instead. So I woke up late. Kenny was very kind about it. It was like, it's fine. We'll record in 20 minutes. Get yourself awake. I made myself some tea. I came into my room. I sat down on my Florida podcast, logged into Skype, sent Kenny a message saying, hey, I'm online. And then I always sit, like, to record podcasts, I sit on my floor and I'm next to my bed, right? And so I was like, I'm really tired. I'm just going to lean against my bed because it's comfy. I definitely fell back asleep leaning against my bed for like the 3 minutes or whatever until Kenny called me. So then when I hear in my ears the little do, 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 do for the Skype call, I like jumped and got terrified. I was like, what is happening? Because I fell asleep again. So I might be kind of out of it, but I'm starting to wake up. I have tea, which means I have some caffeine in my system.
You're here, though, and that's
the I'm here.
Yes, so we're here talking about SmackDown. Sorry, I just, there's a chat on our Facebook community about my ID shaming last night from
because you were a horrible, horrible customer.
Listen, we need to learn to agree to disagree, Sondra. That's how we're going to get along.
Okay, we can learn to agree to disagree, but, like, just don't be a dick to retail employees anymore,
please. If they're
not
dicks to me, then I'll not be dicks to them.
They were not. She was not being a dick to you.
You did not hear her tone.
Okay, maybe.
If you had heard her tone, then but you cannot, when you're not in a situation, at an environment, accurately assess the situation.
To be fair, I've probably given that tone to plenty of people who are like, oh, are you kidding? You want to see my ID? And I'm like, no, I'm not fucking kidding. It's my job. Show me your ID or I will hold your alcohol hostage. Which is what I tell people.
Now, my issue is more with the rule than the person. But what paused me there, because there are people on your side, Sondra, there are people on my side. Doesn't mean either of us are wrong. We just have different opinions. My issue is more, you know, with, like, if you're 25, challenged. Anyway, I hate the rule. Anyway, but Adam James was, there was people, you know, chiming in, like, Ross McLeod used to work at Marks and Spencer's in Glasgow and was told, because he was 17 at the time, that went on the tills, he had to ID everyone, no exceptions, because he was underage. And then he says, just let that rule sink in. The guy serving you isn't allowed to drink, so you need your ID. I was told that not doing so would result in my sacking. Shower of bastards. So that's the rules. You can hire underage people to serve. Anyway, but Adam James was the one that I wanted to get your take on this one, Sondra, because it stopped me in my tracks to the point where I couldn't converse with you any longer. So I want to know what you think of this. So Adam James says, I used to work as a stockroom manager at New Look, clothes shop, and had to supervise someone attempting to return a pair of jeans with actual human shit in them. Do I win?
Ew.
Is that how this works?
Yeah, that's disgusting. That's when you say, no, 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 that's not a returnable item. You have soiled it.
Thanks for clarifying, Sondra, that that's not a returnable item. I'm
sure, it's just
everyone listening thought that's such a returnable item.
It's like just so not a returnable item. Ugh. People are the worst, though, right? Like, people are the... Customers are the worst.
See, sometimes. I think that you get an equal measure of dick customers and dick employees. I think it's a very equal measure. Like, because there's times where, like, I've been on, like... I was saying this yesterday, genuinely, I am as nice as pie to anybody, initially. And, like, sometimes you'll get, like, a... Like, you know, if you go in, like, an aeroplane or something, and you're like, oh, you know, I'm going my holidays, and this is exciting. And then, you know, you give a nice wee smile to the steward, and then sometimes they walk past you and just look at you like you're dirt. And you're like,
mm-hmm.
What did I do? It's your job to fucking work in a plane, not me.
True. It's just like there are some people who are nice and fine about the ID situation, and they're like, oh, I understand. Yes, I'm 30, but whatever. I don't have it with me. I get that. That's fine. I'll go home and get my passport without complaining that, you know, I've wasted your life or something. And then they get their passport, and I say, thank you for verifying your age, and we have a lovely transaction.
And do you know what's funny, though? Do you know what's interesting, right? Do you know how this whole situation could have been avoided? You, Sandra.
Me?
You're partly to blame with this whole situation. Do you want to know why?
Why?
So, when I graciously, out of the bottom of my heart, said, right, guys, we're all in America, listen, I'll take care of the booking of the SmackDown tickets for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys just, I don't want you guys to be burdened with that. I will take the ownership of that organization.
Which and was very lovely of you.
Thank you. And then we get to the arena, and we have the 8 tickets, and I distribute them all out to people. And then 2 of those tickets did not work, which is me and Kyle. So everybody else, including you, walked up to your seats, sat down in a leisurely format to enjoy the ambiance of SmackDown Live as it began. Kyle and I ran to the box office bit, had to wait 4 minutes while this fat man tried to decipher what to do. And then he finally gave us the tickets back. And because this was 37 seconds before SmackDown started, we ran to make the show and to get our seats. And I, in that hasty moment, left my driver's license at the Amway Center, where it still resides to this day.
Mm.
Now, had I not been the organization man there, I would have kept my driver's license, and then that lovely young lady would have asked that question. I would have said, do you know what? I've got my driver's license on me, no problem. But instead, because of you and Ollie and
I can Dan see how this is David definitely my Val, fault.
That you played a part is what I'm saying. So don't you underestimate your part in all of this.
Okay.
Of course.
It is. I didn't even realize, Kenny, that it was my fault that this poor woman had to be berated by you. I am so sorry. I apologize to this woman on Kenny's behalf because of the large part that I played in this whole scenario.
See, the difference here is I'm trying with Sandra to be like, we just have a difference of opinion. It's fine, but she's having a tone, an under-narrative tone of what she's saying.
I am having a tone because a difference of opinion does not entitle you to be a dick.
It doesn't tell you to be a dick because you don't agree with me.
No, I'm not saying you're being a dick to me. You were a dick to her.
You don't know I was a dick to her. You weren't there.
The way you were talking about how you were a dick to her leads me to believe that you were a dick to her.
I apologize for slightly embellishing a story on a podcast where people are meant to laugh. How dare I not be... Right, would this story have been better? David, can I just tell you something? I went into the petrol station last night, and I had 2 bottles of ginger beer, and I'd forgotten I didn't have my ID, so I went back to the house, and I got my passport, and I came back and I bought them.
I mean, no, not
I mean,
the
what a riveting tale that would have been. SmackDown Live.
SmackDown Live. At least you were buying Krabby's, not like Spreckers or some shit. So good on you for that.
We find something to agree with. But yeah, so SmackDown Live was a crap show, but we need to talk about it, sadly. Blech.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So bad. So SmackDown Live this week emanated from Manchester, New Hampshire, and it opened with Kevin Owens doing a highlight reel. He's taken over from Chris Jericho for reasons that nobody really knows, and he talks.
I mean, at first when I saw Kevin Owens come out, I was like, oh, Kevin Owens doing the highlight reel, what a dick move, because he's like, haha, I took Chris Jericho's title and now I'm taking his show, and so I thought maybe this could be good. But it wasn't.
Yeah, it was bad. So I don't really know why we're still bringing up Chris Jericho. He's gone. Like, can we move on? But
I mean, maybe just because, you know, boo Kevin Owens, you're such a dick, and we still love Chris Jericho, and you're the one who put him out of action, and maybe they're trying to keep Chris Jericho in our minds for when Chris Jericho comes back. I don't know when that's going to be, but I mean, I would like to see Chris Jericho back relatively soon after he's done touring or whatever he's doing. I mean, is he touring for a month?
No, he's touring for like two, I think he's away all summer basically, minimum.
Oh, is he?
I don't know how long after that. I don't know what he's doing after that. So I'm unsure. But I mean, yeah, maybe they're just keeping you in his mind. But anyway, he does this promo where he's got the highlight reel, and then AJ Styles comes out, and they have a sort of back and forth. And Owen says, you know, he's gonna do everything better than Jericho, including beating you, to AJ Styles. And then Jinder Mahal interrupts to just suck all life out of everything, because he can't cut promos. And he comes out, he says Maharaja a couple of times. Has he lost his voice?
Last week it sounded like he had lost his voice. I'm wondering if he was sick or something, because...
Join the club.
Last week... Yeah, well, I mean, last week it really sounded like his voice was super hoarse, like he had a cold or something. And this week it didn't seem quite so bad, but I wouldn't doubt that he had some sort of laryngitis issue.
Yeah, maybe. But he just sounded a bit kind of hoarse. So he, you know, came out and said he was going to beat Randy Orton on Sunday, and that he was supposed to be the original guest on the highlight reel. And eventually that sends us to AJ Styles and Jinder Mahal first. But what did you think of this opening segment of AJ and Kevin Owens building up their match for Sunday, and then the interruption of the ever so exciting Jinder Mahal?
There is no situation in which Kevin Owens stealing the highlight reel from Chris Jericho and then having AJ Styles as a guest on the highlight reel, or having AJ Styles interrupt Kevin Owens, should be boring. But it was kind of boring. And I think part of the problem for me, and my biggest problem with the AJ Styles-Kevin Owens feud right now, is that AJ Styles and Kevin Owens are two of the most talented performers in the WWE. They're two of the best characters in WWE, right? Like, they have so many different character facets. Kevin Owens is the insecure asshole who, you know, can't get away from Sami Zayn always being there with him. He can't get out of the shadow of his friend. He can't get out of the shadow of Chris Jericho now, which makes it interesting that he would do the highlight reel when he's been trying to separate himself from Chris Jericho. But, I mean, as AJ Styles said, you know, you're trying to, you know, you stole his list, you stole this, blah, 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 blah. Like, you're trying to maintain relevance by stealing all of Chris Jericho's stuff. It's interesting character nuance from Kevin Owens. You know what isn't interesting nuance from Kevin Owens? America. I'm the face of America, and AJ Styles, like an American, is interrupting. And that's all this segment was just... You know, I'm United States champion, so I'm the face of America, and I'm going to speak French because I can. Boo, speaking multiple languages. And then Jinder Mahal comes out to just reinforce the fact that he has the same gimmick as Kevin Owens, but doesn't do it as well. Because he's like, and now I'm going to speak to my people in Punjabi. Or he said, as, you know, Mahatma Gandhi once said, in Punjabi, and then, you know, says something in Punjabi. Like, are you just trying to illustrate the fact that Jinder Mahal is a lesser Kevin Owens? And why are you trying to make Kevin Owens one of your best characters that you have on the roster, with one of the best, like, backstories and consistent character motivations since his debut in NXT? He hasn't changed. Why are you making Kevin Owens just a guy who thinks America's shit or whatever? Like, it's so lackluster to me. It's so lackluster. And someone had gotten in touch on Twitter and said that it's the first time the whole foreign menace heel thing has worked for them. And I think that's great. If it's working for some people, it's not working for me.
It's working with Kevin Owens or working with Jinder Mahal?
Working with, I think, with Kevin Owens. Okay. Not, well, maybe with Jinder Mahal. I don't even know, actually. The tweet was ambiguous. But it's... I mean, because Jinder Mahal isn't even really playing foreign menace to Randy Orton being the valiant American. And AJ Styles just, to me, doesn't scream like, hey, patriotism. That's not what AJ Styles is. AJ Styles is the phenomenal one. AJ Styles is the guy who beat John Cena and beat up John Cena. AJ Styles is the face that runs the place. AJ Styles was the champion on SmackDown for a long time and was great and had a great championship reign on SmackDown, other than the Ellsworth thing. And I just don't understand why this is the feud they're going with. It just seems so lazy and uninspired.
Yeah, I don't really understand why Kevin Owens is the face. Well, I mean, I understand why he's the face of America. I just don't think it's that interesting. I think Kevin Owens is a character who... I'm trying to think of an example, because it feels very familiar to me. It feels sometimes like when... This is not the same thing. So I'm using a very sort of hyperbolic statement here, just because I need to make sure I'm very clear about what I'm saying. But, like, when Rey Mysterio started using, like, Eddie Guerrero's ghost in storylines, it was kind of like, oh, but, like, Rey Mysterio's kind of just good on his own. He doesn't really need to be using that. Like, he doesn't really need to do that. Or, like, when Shawn Michaels had to pretend that he had no money and he'd gone bankrupt and had to become JBL's servant, and you're like, but he's like Shawn Michaels. Like, he's really good. You don't really need to make him, like, JBL's lackey. Like, it's just, it's not believable. So, I don't really think that Kevin Owens, like, him saying he's the face of America is fine, because he's the US champion, I get that. I think it's more, for me, the thing that's a bit jarring is the, his huge face on the ground, his huge face on the Tron, and, like, it all of a sudden being about America. But then
well,
again,
that's the thing, like, I like the huge face on the Tron, I like the huge face on the ground, because Kevin Owens thinks that he's on top of the world, right, and Kevin Owens thinks that he's the most important guy. That's consistent with Kevin Owens' character.
See, I find that the most jarring part of it.
I think I find the most jarring part of it just that there isn't any intrigue, and I think maybe, I think we just, the face on the Tron thing I like just because it's kind of an interesting visual and it's something I could see Kevin Owens doing, right? Because he's the one who called Raw, you know, the Kevin Owens show. And he was like, no, this is the Kevin Owens show. You're going to listen to what I say and I'm the most important one on the show and whatnot when he was Universal Champion. I get that seems consistent for me, but I think the face part seems consistent to me, right? Like, I'm the most important face around here. The focus on America is jarring to me because that just doesn't seem like any part of his character motivation whatsoever. And even if it is, it seems secondary to him thinking that he's amazing. He's always thought he's amazing because he's Kevin Owens, not because he's Canadian.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he has spoken French a couple of times in promos as like a passing thing, but it's never been like his defining characteristic. But yeah, I guess for me, it's just, I feel like the, you know, the kind of his face on the ground, his face on the Tron is very sort of like overly flashy. And I feel like he just beat up Chris Jericho because Chris Jericho was too flashy.
So like, yeah, that's a good point.
It doesn't really fit for me sort of continuity wise. But I think basically what I think will happen is they will do this for a couple of months and then realize, oh, he's actually all right without doing that. And then they'll move on. So it'll be fine. We do get AJ Styles versus Jinder Mahal in a match that goes about 15 minutes. It was about 14 and a half minutes too long. Because Jinder Mahal's terrible. Like, all joking aside, he is awful in the ring.
This was not good.
He is dire. Dire. Ugh.
Like, he is basically competent at doing some moves, but this wasn't good. And this was an AJ Styles match. Right? Like, I mean, AJ Styles, Baron Corbin wasn't stellar either, but I think Baron Corbin's better than Jinder Mahal.
Oh yeah, 100%. Especially given that Baron Corbin's only been doing this a couple of years, you know.
Jinder, right.
I think Jinder's been doing this about a decade. And I don't want to shit on Jinder as like a, like, Jinder's perfectly fine to be one of the guys that, like, you use on the mid-card or, you know, enhancement or all that sort of stuff. I think that when you're on a roster with all these people, it just become, it's like, so with me, if I was to go and play five-a-side football down at the park with a couple of friends, I did that. So when I used to work at What Culture, we went and did a game of football, right? Like one of the, on the one of the Wednesdays. And I went in goals because I was smart enough to, my cardio is not good enough to run for 60 minutes. So I was like, I'll go in goals. Then I don't need to run. And I saved a lot of goals. And people were like, oh my God, you're really good. It's not that I'm really good. It's just that we're all kind of just having a kick about and I happen to be okay in goals.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't look, I look good in that environment because I'm overachieving in that environment. Whereas if I went to play for like a football team, like, you know, a team that are in like a proper league and all that sort of stuff, and they put me in goals, it would be very quickly apparent that I'm not very good. And I feel like Jinder Mahal is that kind of case.
Yeah, and I mean, if Jinder Mahal versus AJ Styles was fine, because I think it got a little bit better toward the end, but it did feel very long. Mm-hmm. And if Jinder Mahal versus AJ Styles is, you know, fine but not great, and you can see AJ doing everything he can to try and make the match better, it really doesn't fill me with hope or anything for Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton.
Jinder fucking Mahal.
Randy fucking Orton.
At least he's fucking interested on Twitter.
Not on Twitter, as a heel he is.
Oh, that Drew Gulak picture. Outstanding.
That made me laugh, actually. So it was like, boo! And Drew Gulak's one of my favorites, so I'm just like, why? Why? Why are you with that cunt?
But I will give Jinder Mahal a kind of compliment here. I do think he actually needed to win here. Horrible as it is.
No, I think he needed to win here, and I like the fact that he won due to interference. Although, what I didn't like about it was just the way the interference played out, because this was when he got hit to the back of the knee with the title belt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one hit to the back of the leg with the title belt killed him dead. It seems like I would have liked a little bit more interference or beat down or something, because just one shot to the back of the leg with a title belt didn't seem like enough that it would just kill AJ Styles super, super dead.
Well,
but
I guess the combination is that it's not so much that it killed him dead, like it slowed him down, but the problem is you go from him getting hit in the knee and then that's followed up with Jinder's atrocious finisher.
Yeah.
Which is not in any way believable that could pin you. So it's not like, you know, AJ getting hit in the knee made him vulnerable to taking, like, dirty deeds or something, which is, like, a good finisher. You know, it looks like it hurts. You can understand why someone would not be able to get up at the count of three. Whereas the Cobra Clutch Slam thing that he does just looks like you're going for a wee swing round.
It kind of does. And
sore.
That's part of the problem, too, is that the finisher's not very good. And I understand if they want to protect the finisher and if they want to build this finisher as a thing, then it makes sense, obviously, for AJ not to kick out of it, right? Because that's what they're trying to go for, is like, ooh, the Cobra Clutch Slam is... And they called it something this week. They actually had a name for it, and I don't remember what it was. But the Cobra Clutch Slam... I guess we're meant to believe that if he hits that on Randy Orton, it could be as deadly as the RKO, right? And so I like what they're trying to do. It doesn't resonate all that well for me. But
yeah.
I mean, I will say that Jinder coming out of nowhere, he has actually become sort of a compelling character just by virtue of the fact that he shouldn't be there. I think that's one of the most compelling things about him. And I mean, his promos aren't great, but he is trying. He's
so what?
Like
I could go into WWE and be shit and go, oh, I'm trying.
Well, but I mean, he's done everything, and maybe this is a damning statement, but I mean, he's done everything he can to make himself interesting, and I am sort of more interested in Jinder Mahal than I thought I'd be.
This is everything he can do to be interesting.
I don't know. I mean, in such a short period of time, he's done quite a lot, because he was not interesting and had no character, and now he has, you know, the Singh brothers with him, and that's cool, and he looks angry, and
does not mean he's exciting. Listen, I would much rather
see... He's not exciting.
I would much rather see the Bollywood Salsa Boys, which is what I'm going to call them from now on, because that's what they are, the Bollywood Salsa Boys, like, being short men who add up to the size of one normal person, going up against people... in title matches, would be the best thing ever.
That would be incredible. I would be all
Imagine
for that.
Imagine if they won a battle royal together to face Randy Orton.
I could definitely see that being a thing. I would love to see that being a thing, actually. Like, that would actually make my heart sing with joy. But
hey.
I think one of the most interesting thing about Jinder Mahal as a character is that he doesn't necessarily deserve to be there. He won one... you know, one number one contendership match and locked into it. But now he's taken steps to make sure that he can keep winning. And he uses the Singh brothers to his advantage. So because he always has the dastardly Singh brothers in his pocket, and because they seem to just kind of always be there helping him win, I think that's actually making him heelish. Not just because he speaks another language, but because, you know, oh, what a prick. Like, you know he can't beat AJ Styles on his own, but he has these two little lackeys who are going to help him beat AJ Styles. And then he did, and then he pinned AJ Styles, which pisses me off because Jinder fucking Mahal, and he pinned AJ Styles, and I love AJ Styles, but that's kind of how I'm supposed to feel about it. So it's working for me more than I thought it would. That said, he's shite in the ring, and the match is not going to be good. Although I still kind of hope he wins because he's not Randy Orton.
I love that that's what it's come to now. That's the barometer that we have. I hope he wins. The thing is, trust me, people are going to very quickly regret that statement of, let's just have gender work because he's not Randy Orton. It would be like a plague on the championship for like... I mean, the thing is, like, I'm not...
Until Rusev beats him.
Exactly. Get him to keep it and then... Listen, it's much more compelling for Randy Orton to lose it to Rusev than it is to lose it to Jinder fucking Mahal. Oh, he's so, so shit.
Well, given what happens at the end of SmackDown, I doubt Jinder Mahal is going to win.
Well, apparently I need to do the month of Maharaja, so hopefully not. Oh, God. Anyway.
That makes me kind of want Jinder Mahal to win. I have no idea what punishment I would come up with for you, but it could be fun.
Kenny needs to apologize to the safety.
Kenny needs to apologize to the woman that he was a dick to.
You allege. Listen, I can find ways to apologize. Listen, I'm really sorry that you feel the way you do. You know, one of those apologies. Anyway.
You would issue a Randy Orton apology, wouldn't you?
I would. I totally would. Lana's still making her way to SmackDown, so that should be fun when she gets here. Whatever she's doing, I don't know. We'll see.
Dancing.
But then we get the fashion files. The best...
Did you hear Tom Phillips like segue from the Lana segment to the fashion files? It was the greatest thing. He was like, I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was something like, you know, and someone who might have, you know, been worried about Lana or concerned with Lana or something is Fandango, but he's moved on to being a part of the fashion police. And that's how he segued into the fashion files. And then he was like, you know, we're in New Hampshire, we're not in Vermont, but screw it. The super troopers of SmackDown Live.
So we get the fashion files, and Fandango's in the room. It's all about the Usos, the big bust-up in Sunday at Backlash. And then a janitor comes in, who is very clearly Tyler Breeze. But Fandango is not aware of this, as any good cop duo from the 70s who can't see through a latex head mask.
And that mustache.
And the mustache. So
it was a very clever disguise.
Very clever disguise. And they talk a little bit about some of the biggest, you know, fashion incidents, like Baron Corbin, who has 3 t-shirts, all wolves. They do one on Sami Zayn. But the best one, without question, is when Tyler Breeze shows the Usos t-shirt, which says "Day One-ish," which I still don't understand I still don't understand what that's actually supposed to mean.
I'm not super sure myself. I don't really understand it.
But Fandango made it seem a little bit more sensible by saying, "What does Day One is H mean?" And they both have a back and forth about it, and they confirm that on Sunday, their day ones will be H and freeze frame. It was great.
Yes. And they didn't freeze frame it. They just stood there. And I love Tyler, like, looking around, like, we're freeze framing, right? We're freeze framing. That was the best.
They're very funny.
And they are so funny. I love these vignettes. And also, I mean, Tyler Breeze got a little too in character as the janitor. Like, he was starting to have a breakdown saying, like, we don't have a chance. We don't have a chance. Their hair is so luscious as he's petting his mop. And Fandango's like, Breezy, snap out of it. He's like, your prince pretty. You're the prettiest of all the princes. Which is true.
That is true. They then go on to beat the Colognes, which is a good world to live in.
Yeah.
That they beat the Colognes.
I'm much happier in a world where Breezango are beating the Colognes than when the Colognes are beating American Alpha, who were not on this show, by the way. Not on this show anywhere.
No.
But the fashion files, I love that the fashion files were called Fashionable Intent. That made me happy. Steve Decker asked me on Twitter, he's like, did you see the best caption under all of the pictures on the wall? Because the pictures on the wall change from time to time. And he's like, there are 2 options for best caption. I want to see if you get it. And so I said, I really like Friend Zone under James Ellsworth. That's the one that made me laugh the most. And he's like, yep, that was one. The other one was Bad Hair Life for Dolph Ziggler. Not a bad hair day. Bad Hair Life.
Listen, it's bad hair life. I completely agree.
It's accurate. It's an accurate statement. On Nakamura, they had, you know, spandex, no style.
Props to these guys, though. You know, they were doing nothing, and they found a way. I fully believe that they pitched the fashion files.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, props to them for going all out on that one. The Usos did come out afterwards and cut a promo. They asked if Breeze Angle were like to play cops and robbers, and welcomed them to the Usos penitentiary, and they were going to read them the rights. I think it was Jimmy. Jimmy said that, you know, that they probably have goosebumps in the back of their neck and felt that someone was behind them. It wasn't paranoia. It was the Usos. I'm very curious to know the last time the Usos came out to do a promo and didn't drink five-hour energy drinks before they came out.
Yeah. Well, I think this time they might have only drank four because they seemed a little off. Like, it wasn't quite as hyper as last week. And they seemed to stumble over their words a little bit more this week, too. I really had no idea what they were saying. I was weirdly kind of into it. Like, but I didn't know what the point of it was. I kept hearing police type words like penitentiary and whatnot, but I was like, I don't really know what you're trying to accomplish. Are they going to lock up the fashion police or something? I mean, I know that the main point is we will win and you will not. And they're trying to get in the heads of Breezango because they're trying to intimidate them, and they might see, you know, Tyler Breeze seems like he's a little bit intimidated. When Breezango were looking at the Usos doing the promo, they looked a little intimidated because they feel like they're out of their depth. Because again, they were just losing all the time until they got the number one contendership, kind of, again, like on a fluke. And now they're the number one contenders, and now they have to face the champions, who are the best ones, and they've had the titles for a while. So it's kind of an interesting story in that regard, and makes Breezango these, like, beautiful underdogs who I really, really, really just want to win because I love them so much. And it warms my heart to see how the crowd is reacting to Breezango. I mean, it's one of the best reactions, whereas they used to just be like, whatever. Like, they're actually being beloved by the crowd. And I mean, obviously most people on Twitter love them as well. So I get all these tweets like, you must be so happy because everyone loves Breezango. Yeah, I am so happy because they're talented and it's nice to see them wrestling actual matches again and winning.
Happy day to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
We then get the, you know, every time there's a six person tag team match, I think you need to make sure you have a contract signing because it just makes it really official.
What even?
So we get the six women contract signing for the match on Sunday at Backlash. Shane McMahon's presiding because he's the commissioner. That's what commissioners do. So he threw over to Natalia first, who just, what's great about Natalia, she can't speak like a human.
Right.
And she,
like, even in her little Total Divas, like the confessionals where they have to talk to the camera, she doesn't even really sound human then.
Nope. Not at all.
Ever. She doesn't even necessarily sound human when she's having a conversation with Tyson Kidd. It's like, this is supposed to be the reality part of reality television. Or when she's, like, talking to her mom or her mental sister.
Her Total Nightheart still needs to be a thing.
It really, really does.
Shout out to Eva Marie, who's no longer going to be part of Total Divas. So, bye-bye to Eva Marie, I guess.
Isn't her Twitter now, like, her profile has her with black hair again? I don't follow Eva Marie, so I haven't checked on it, but I think I saw a screen cap. Like,
yeah, she,
pretty much all WWE mention is gone now.
Yeah, I think she's gone, so. Oh, well. At least we had the Bayley and Eva Marie match. I doubt she was ever going to top that, so, you know.
No.
We got it. But Natalia does, you know, promos talks about, like, you know, it's funny to see you guys all pretend to be BFFs, because that's how real people speak. And then she talks about,
I was just like, don't invoke the name of the BFFs, okay? One of them was a BFF, the other two of y'all were not.
NXT reference, folks. NXT reference. Just so you
it's
know.
True.
She said that after Sunday, you know, they would all know who was the best there is, best there was, best there will be. Becky Lynch got the mic and said that, you know, there was no chance she was going to join their goon squad, and she looked forward to slapping each one of them in the face. So she signed the contract. But what was really funny is when Natalia signed the contract, and then, like, Tamina signs it straight after. And my favorite thing about Tamina is Tamina just looks so fucking raging to just be in the room at all times.
Yeah.
When she was walking up to sign it, you could see her kind of going like, for fuck's sake, why am I having to sign a fucking contract or a fucking match? So yeah, I kind of think Tamina and I would get on really well as friends. I think we'd just get pissed at the bar. So
I think she seems like a lot of fun to hang out with.
Yep. So then Becky Lynch signs the contract. Naomi then says that they should all contact their hairdresser because she was going to snatch them bad. And Charlotte comes on after that and says that she's going to... They were going to beat them up, and then afterwards the Queen was going to come for her crown. It says that to Naomi, and then James Ellsworth speaks up where he decides to just have a go at all of them. And he had a good line about Charlotte at the end saying, like, you know, you're the queen who wants me to be your probable king, but I'll always be the prince to the princess of Staten Island. It's a pretty decent line for James.
Yeah.
And then Naomi went for Ellsworth, and Carmella smashed her face on the table, and they all broke it up, which led into a match. But what did you think of the... I know you're not a huge fan of contract signings anyway, but what did you think of this segment to try and hype up the six women on Sunday?
I'm not a huge fan of contract signings. I think this one was dull. It wasn't very interesting. I mean, the dynamic between Naomi and Charlotte is still kind of interesting because they still have some unfinished business. They talked about it on Talking Smack as well, right? Like, Charlotte still wants to come for the SmackDown Women's Championship. So you have that whole unlikely allies in this situation against the welcoming committee. I'm fine with that. My biggest problem with this contract signing, other than it just being dull and everyone trying to get their lines in and it not really accomplishing anything other than a brawl we've seen 12 bazillion times, is I hated so much when Naomi was talking. And she wasn't very good here doing her promo in the first place. Like, does she say any other words other than I will snatch you bald? Like, that is the only thing she's been saying lately. And it's frustrating. And, like, I get it. But, I don't know. Learn some new words. The new words I did not want her to learn was calling James Ellsworth her. Like, she's like, you know, I'm going to snatch you. I'm going to snatch you. I'm going to snatch you. And especially her. And she said it with such disdain, like, oh, ha, 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 James Ellsworth, I'm going to call you a woman because that is the worst insult coming from a woman. And it just screams to me of male writers not knowing how to write a women's feud at all. Can we please get some women in the writing room to write some of these lines? Because this is so stupid. Like, I hate, you know how much I hate when, like, people are called girls to, like, insult them because they're weak and they're whatever. Because, like, no, girls are fucking awesome. Maybe it's 2017 and we cannot have those types of insults, especially coming from another woman. Like, oh, it just irked me. It irked me so much. There are plenty of things to insult about James Ellsworth without having to resort to, like, ha ha, you probably have a vagina.
Maybe he does. I don't know.
Maybe, but he's a man. Like,
I mean, a vagina is an insult in Glasgow because you call someone like you, oh, you're a fucking fanny.
Like, well, yeah, but I mean, like, you know, that's an insult. But also, like, you being a dick is an insult. Like, I didn't mean you. I meant like people. But it's just, that just frustrates me because it's just this whole like it opens up this whole conversation about like internalized misogyny and da 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 da, and I'm not going to go into it, but it bugged me and I wanted to call attention to it because I would much rather see Naomi be likable and not just like, oh, haha, you're a woman. And they're like, and James is like, what? Like, he actually was just kind of like, why is this an insult? Like, I mean, you're insulting me, but whatever. And it fell flat for me. And I forget who it was on Twitter, but said that Naomi's character is just not very likable, or maybe it was in the Facebook group. I can't keep it straight anymore. But Naomi wasn't very likable on this show. Like, she was taunting and she was acting like a dick in the ring. And I don't know. Like, and Naomi has been one of the most likable characters since, you know, coming back from injury and then winning the title in her hometown. And that was all a really feel good moment. And I was getting behind Naomi. And now I'm kind of starting to find her a little bit unlikable, which is bad because I think that might be part of the problem I have with the story as well. Is like, remember before Elimination Chamber, we had three separate women's feuds that all had their own stories and everyone felt fully formed and you could tell why they were all happening and the stories transitioned from one to the other and they all made sense and there was logic behind it. And now it's just three versus three. We're in the same holding pattern that we really were in before WrestleMania because it's not a feud based on personal issues or anything of the individual women, it's just 3-on-3 because we're all here. And Charlotte's just part of it because she's just there. And the championship doesn't really seem to matter all that much. And I know it's secondary because Naomi and Charlotte still have their tension and that's part of it. But I think it just speaks to the need to have more women on the show, because if you're going to do a welcoming committee kind of storyline like this, I would prefer it not involve the champion. And why is the welcoming committee going after Charlotte and not Naomi, who has the title? Like, shouldn't they want the title?
Yeah, no, it's fair. Just to touch on the Naomi calling James Ellsworth a girl kind of thing. Obviously, like, you're just more focused on those issues than I am. So, like, I'm not going to feel as strongly as you do about it. Just because I'm not looking for it, and it doesn't bother me the same way, because I don't look at it that way. It just doesn't come out to me. But what I will say is, I just thought the insult was kind of lazy. More than being
it is lazy.
Like, I wasn't offended by it. I was just like, that's a bit lazy. And it's interesting because, you know, there's all these discussions going on right now, and, like, you know, I know a lot of people have said, like, Inside the Ropes is cool because you can kind of have loads of different opinions, and you can, and that's great. But, like, something I saw today on the news, and I, like, rolled my eyes and was like, oh, for fuck's sake, was this mother in Scotland has complained to a supermarket store because there was a jumper in the boys' section saying boys will be boys. And she found that very offensive and wants the jumper to no longer be on sale. Right, which to me
that's overkill.
Which to me is like the biggest eye roll. I can't even roll the eyes as far as I could for how I feel about that, because I'm like, shut up! Like, it's like, if you don't like it, don't buy it. Like, it's like, it's not like it's saying boys over girls, boys equal best. Like, that's not what it's saying. There's a very, very, very long standing phrase in the UK where, like, you know, there's a joke where it's like boys will be boys. You know, that's all it is. I'm not saying it's the cleverest.
Oh yeah, we have that here too.
But it's not offensive. Like, if you really want to, like, attack the retailers or whatever, like, okay, like, maybe, okay, well, why is it that a load of little girl stuff is more about being princesses and being bossy? Like, change them rather than trying to, like, have a fucking go because a boy's jumper's on sale? Like, come on. Like, so I think that sometimes the reason I'm bringing that one up is because I look at that one and I go, oh my god, get a life, you mother. Like, just get a life. Whereas with the Naomi thing, once you brought it up and you kind of put your context to it, I kind of go, oh yeah, I can see your point. You know? Like, it's not, it didn't scream it to me, but I listened to what you said, go, oh yeah, I get it. Cool. You know?
Yeah.
And like, I think
the boys will be boys thing is one of those situations, like, could I come up with a reason to be offended by it? Sure. Is the phrase on a jumper in a store harmful in itself? No, I really don't think it is. And if you're going to spend your time railing against that and that's what you're choosing to attack instead of a whole host of other problems that actually exist in the world, then maybe your time would be better spent elsewhere, I would say. But yeah, that especially, like, coming from a woman trying to use her as an insult, it bothers me just as much whenever John Cena says, you know, oh, you don't have anything between your legs, or da, 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 da. You know that that's one of my least favorite things in the world. I mean, Dolph Ziggler one time was throwing around gendered insults wearing skinny jeans and having his hair look like that. It's like, who even are you? Do you see you right now? Like, it's just, it's so lazy. And there are other insults to lob at people than, no, you're a girl. I don't like it.
Yeah, no, and I think it is more of a lazy thing in intent rather than be like, I doubt that the writers were like, let's see how we can offend women here. You know,
I think, oh, of course not. I think it's just when you have a room full of male writers, it's not going to jump out at them. Like, it's not something that even stuck out to you to say it in the synopsis of what was, you know, happening in the contract signing, right? Like, it wasn't an insult that even registered in your brain as a thing, which I'm not saying, you know, that makes you a horrible person if you don't notice these things. It's just, if you have a room full of male writers,
more votes for women, more votes for women.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, that's part of why we need more women in creative and more women to speak up backstage on these sorts of things. Like, we've come a long way in the women's division in terms of giving them time and giving them stories and characters and letting them feel like actual proper superstars. There's been a lot of progress, but that's not, like, the end point. You know, we're not at an end point. And I think that Something else that needs to be examined is more women actually in the backstage and creative processes in professional wrestling, in, you know, in addition to obviously other media. But it's just a discussion.
Yeah, no, sure. And I think that we need to make sure that the women in creative are not Stephanie, because she tried that before. And it
That's
really
the problem, is that everyone's like, yeah, but Stephanie. But yeah, it's just Stephanie. And also, didn't necessarily, we need some women who are good at being in creative.
Well, it's like Shane.
And more than one.
Shane McMahon tried to be in creative for a while, and it didn't quite work out for him. Doesn't mean he's a bad, like, doesn't mean he's bad. Like, he's got a lot of skills and a lot of different things he can do. And it just
That's just not where his skills are best used.
Yeah, 100%. So anyway, we got a match with Naomi and Carmella that went on for about 11 or 12 minutes or something, and in the end Naomi was hit from behind by Tamina, and that gave Carmella an opening to roll up the women's champion and pin her. So Carmella got the win on this one. I thought the match went a little bit long, well, a fair bit longer than it needed to, and I'm just kind of ready for the six women thing to happen. Like, I am actually quite into it, truth be told. Like, I actually quite enjoyed the contract signing. Don't know why. I like the idea that, like kind of what you were saying, it's not perfect, but we had a segment where we had multiple women verbalizing and promoing each other about why they want to fight. And the story actually makes sense to me of why they're all fighting. And I like the little dynamics of, like, you know, Natalia thinks she's the boss of the team. You can tell Carmella's not super okay with it, but she's like, okay, on you go. Tamina can't be bothered, but she's just kind of there. Naomi and Becky are kind of on the same page. Charlotte's reluctant to do it, but she is doing it even though she wants a title shot. It's all kind of cool dynamics. So I like that. But
I think the whole Carmella-Natalia thing is going to continue to be an interesting dynamic, because Carmella got the pin last week too. Mm-hmm. And Carmella, you know, got the pin this week on Naomi, on the actual champion. So I think she can probably bring up to Natalia now, you know, hey, I've been the one winning these matches. And the Naomi Carmella match was not great, but one of the things I wanted to mention about it, did you notice how often Carmella was just, like, shrieking and running away? Like, she was very loud. She was very loud and screaming. And there was one point where Naomi was, like, going to kick her in the leg or, her, like, the stomach or something, and she kept protecting her face.
Yes.
And it was very bizarre. And Mr. Sandra came into the room. He goes, what even is Carmella doing? And I was like, yelling a lot? I don't know. And he was like, is she suddenly afraid of wrestling? Because that's kind of how it seemed. And I get, like, she was probably just healing it up, right? And trying to play to the ref and act like she was more hurt than she was, so that the ref would, like, have to check on her and it would give her a respite. But just the way it played out was kind of hilarious to me.
Yeah, like, I'm just ready for the six women tag now. Like, I'm looking forward to it. So I'm like, I'm kind of, I don't really need to see these little matches to lead up to it anymore. I feel like I'm kind of, I feel like Backlash should have happened last weekend, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like the lead up to Backlash has just felt too long. Like, there's, when they got all of the stories and the feuds together this week, it just seemed like they didn't really have much more to build. So
it's like when you do it. I know this one doesn't work for you, but it's like, you know, when it's building up to Christmas and you've got, like, a bunch of Christmas nights out or Christmas dinners you need to go to or meeting up with friends or doing Christmassy related things, and you do like four or five Christmas nights out, or you do four or five Christmas dinners. And you're like, right, cool. Now I'm, like, amped for Christmas Day because I'm going to get my presents. I'm going to get to see people and da-da-da. And then you do all these 4 or 5 nights out and you go, oh, fuck, there's still a week to go. What am I going to do now? Like, I've still got a week of this pre-Christmas thing happening.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how I feel every year. I always just want Christmas to be over. But
even for some of us who like it, like, feel the same way for different reasons. We then cut to a Dolph Ziggler promo backstage where he talks about he's done his research on Nakamura. We get a video showing all the things Nakamura's done in WWE. It didn't have anything on it.
And, it's said footage not found.
And Dolph said Nakamura's not accomplished anything. And then aired a video of his accomplishments. And nothing will satisfy him more than spitting in the face of everyone that's turned his back on him. And Nakamura's where it begins.
Who is he, Carlito?
I actually thought fair play to Ziggler. I liked what it was trying to do. I think the problem again goes back to, I was ready to see this a week ago, and I did see this like 2 weeks ago in Glasgow.
Right.
So I'm kind of just like, guys, like, you're not going to be able to sell me on Backlash anymore. Like, I actually am looking forward to watching it, but I'm at the point now where I'm like, just fucking happen already.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah, like, I'm looking forward to Backlash. I really am. I just, whenever Dolph Ziggler speaks, it's just such an exercise in sadness, right? Like, this whole video package just to me was such an exercise in the sadness of Dolph Ziggler, because if he's going through all of his accomplishments, and he has accomplishments, he does, but look where it got him. It got him to being like the least important person in a feud with Shinsuke Nakamura, who's debuting, and that's it. And it's gotten him to the point where a lot of people just want to switch off when he's on screen. Like, honestly, if I didn't have to watch SmackDown, I just would have fast-forwarded through this, because I just don't care to hear Dolph Ziggler talk, and I know what he's going to say.
Also,
he's going to say the exact same thing as he always says all the time.
But it's like, you know, like, say, let's use something on Raw as an example. When you look at, like, Dean Ambrose and The Miz, when they had their match for the IC title, what
right.
was kind of compelling about that was you were like, either of them could win.
Yeah.
So you're like, I'm into it, because there's a history there. Both the characters are doing pretty well right now. Cool, like, that's cool. But with Ziggler and Nakamura, you know Nakamura's not going to lose to Dolph Ziggler. Oh, Matt, can you imagine? In Chicago, they did that.
Can you imagine? I would be afraid. Like, I'd be afraid people around me would just start rioting and everything would burn down. Oh, that would not be a good situation at all. But, I mean, obviously,
I hope they have Nakamura's a good match. They should technically have a good match.
I hope they do, because I worry a little bit about Nakamura, because I've never been as into Nakamura as most people are, right? Because I always kind of was like, well, I mean, he's really cool when he comes out for his entrance, and that's compelling. And some of the stuff he does, like, he's the coolest motherfucker in the world. But then when it came to his matches, other than the Sami Zayn match, there really aren't any Shinsuke Nakamura matches that, like, blew me away to where I was, like, super excited. I mean, the Finn Balor one was also really, really good. But he's not, like, blown me away with it. And as a character, he doesn't have that much going for him right now. And Dolph Ziggler is not giving him much to go on. And everything Dolph Ziggler says, you know, he doesn't have any accomplishments in the WWE. Well, I mean, that's not exactly the way to build Nakamura. I think if you want to make Nakamura exciting, why aren't they showing some vignettes from NXT? Why aren't they showing some of the things he did in NXT with, you know, the added benefit of it being a video package and not having to sit through it for months on end? You could make him look like such a cool badass if you show him, like, winning the title from Samoa Joe. He's a two-time NXT champion. You know, show highlights from his debut in NXT when he fought Sami Zayn, because that was incredible, right? I think that would be a much better way to build Nakamura and build for Nakamura's debut and get us excited than just having Dolph Ziggler come out and insult him every week. So if the debut match doesn't blow people away, I'm kind of afraid that he won't have that much steam behind him.
Well, what's also interesting is that I got, like, I've signed up for the network through one account of my emails, and the other one I'm not under, but the one that I'm not signed up for right now, I got, like, a, you know, one of those, like, we want you back emails, and on that email, like, the big selling point of Backlash is Nakamura,
right?
And it's interesting to me that he is absolutely the selling point of this show, but he's in the kind of, not the coldest match, because the coldest match belongs to fucking Jinder, but like, I just don't know. There's nothing at stake. You know, what you're selling me is a debut. And that's fine.
Right.
But
I just don't feel like they've even adequately gotten us excited for the debut. Because they're trying to do it with a story with Ziggler, but...
I think they have got us excited for a debut, but they've peaked past the excitement of the debut. And then got you 3 weeks later, where you're like, has he not debuted yet? Like...
Yeah. Like, and now it just kind of feels like a holding pattern. I don't know. There's something about it that leaves me cold. And probably that thing is Dolph Ziggler, because he's just such a black hole of charisma and sucking the life out of every feud that he's in for me. Like, the stuff with The Miz is kind of the exception, because when he was fighting The Miz and when he put his career on the line against The Miz, that got compelling. But then as soon as he won the title, it was just, he wasn't compelling anymore. And I mean, Dolph Ziggler, you've said it, I've said it, we've all said it, but he kind of just needs to go away for a little while or drastically change something because this isn't working. And I mean, sad, dead behind the eyes, Dolph Ziggler, it works slightly more than I'm so passionate, I'm going to steal the show, I'm going to be the one who da-da-da-da-da, because now he seems a little more serious and he seems almost like his soul has been broken and he just really needs a win and he's not going to get it. So... I don't know. Like, I should be more excited for Shinsuke Nakamura's main roster proper in-ring debut, and I just, they haven't, it hasn't done it for me.
The bar is pretty high, and, you know, again, where I am right now is I'm like, I'm kind of looking forward to it, but I'm looking forward to next Tuesday to see what the new programs are.
Mm-hmm.
Because I said this to, it was either Robert or David, but, like, my prediction for Nakamura for SummerSlam is John Cena.
I would love that.
Because when I look at it, I go, right, where would you put everybody and where would all the places go? And I just feel like on SmackDown, the biggest match they can offer is Nakamura-Cena.
I think that would be an excellent choice. You know, especially why I think that would be an excellent choice. Because Nakamura would win.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely. I mean, either of them could. You never know. But John Cena's SummerSlam record, not that great.
Mm-hmm.
And then, which could be part of the story, actually.
Exactly. You could have things like AJ Styles and Randy Orton, or AJ Styles and Rusev, if he's the champ, you know, whatever that goes.
Mm-hmm.
There's some cool options. Then we get a backstage promo from Sami Zayn. He's been granted his match with Baron Corbin at Backlash. He talks about being targeted by Corbin since he got there. Wasn't really sure why. And then Baron Corbin attacks Sami from behind, and Corbin told him that he should let it stay down. If he doesn't, he'll put him down permanently on Sunday. So Sami is going to face Baron on Sunday. It should be fun.
I'm quite looking forward to this, actually.
Yeah. I think Sami Zayn fans should be realistic about what's probably going to happen. But like, I think it'll still be a good match.
I think Sami Zayn is one of those people who has that rare ability to lose a lot and still make you get behind him so that when he does win, it is the best moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I am realistic. I'm not going into this with any, you know, like, delusion that I'm like, well, Sami Zayn's obviously going to win over Baron Corbin. I don't think that's going to happen, but if it does, I will be elated. And I think the match will actually be pretty good. I mean, Sami and Baron have kind of an inbuilt story with Baron's hatred of indie guys or hatred of smaller guys or hatred of dorky guys or hatred of guys or everyone, right? Like Baron Corbin thinks he's so above the world. Mm-hmm. And Sammy's just that kind of everyday guy who you just kind of love because he's a dork. And dorky Sami Zayn is my favorite Sami Zayn. I just love him. And I think also if you want Baron Corbin to get better in the ring and if you want Baron Corbin to start, you know, to figure it out even more, because I think he's fine. He's not great or anything, but I think he's not terrible in the ring or anything anymore. But working with guys like Sami Zayn and having really good matches will help with that. So I'm hoping that the match delivers.
We were supposed to see Rusev on the show, but he was not on the show, and he had a tweet to explain why he was not on the show. He also has a new Twitter name, which is Rusev the Ruler, which I loved. And he said, sorry, SmackDown, I had to see the NHL game. See you when I see you.
I love him. He's the best.
So Randy Orton, Baron Corbin is the main event, and they have a match, which is fine. Did not blow my socks off, or knock my socks off. It was kind of there. But in the end, Baron Corbin, after you know a fair few attempts to try and beat the champ, would eat an RKO. And Randy Orton get the victory, and that led us to Jinder Mahal coming out to kill our souls one more time on the show. And he told Orton, you know, that, you know, he relishes time with the title because on Sundays, you know, destroy him and his future. And then the Singhs snuck in to attack Orton, but Orton kind of took them out. But Mahal eventually got in there, beat down Orton, hit him with the Cobra Clutch thing, and sort of like laid him down to close the show. So the Maharaja stood tall, which is just...
The Maharaja stood tall, which leads me to believe that he will not stand tall on Sunday, because that's generally the rule, especially because he so clearly looked like I am dominant over Randy Orton, and he held up the belt, and he was like, look, it's the classic, if this happens on Sunday, we could have a new champion, right? Mm-hmm. And usually when this happens on Tuesday, we do not have a new champion on Sunday. So I'm kind of guessing that Randy Orton will win just based on that.
I'm not taking any chances here. This is dangerous territory, folks. We may have to put up for the rest of the summer, Jinder Mahal as WWE champion.
I don't think it would last that long.
Now, it's not going to be engaging, interesting, fun, eventful, good, great, dynamic, original, or any of those things. It is going to be dull. It will be a dull title reign. He has had a month to get us going.
I find him more compelling than you do at this point, I think. I think his character stuff is, I don't know, I like the Singh brothers with him. I am more interested in Jinder Mahal. I'm more interested in them as an act, but if he wins the title, that they are going to be part of the act, and so that's at least mildly amusing. You know who bores me to tears is Randy Orton.
You know who you liked for like 4 months because he was in the Wyatts?
Randy Orton, but then he burned down Sister Abigail. He burned down the house. I don't like him anymore. Just no.
It's fair. It is fair.
That's when the boo Randy Orton started, was when he burned down the house. So storyline wise, don't like him. Absolute prick. Burns down houses. Not okay with it. Also, him as champion, what has he done as champion that's been compelling? Nothing. At least Jinder Mahal has two lackeys with him who, like, you know, are sniveling behind him, and that's sort of interesting. Randy Orton looks like he cannot be bothered to care about any of this, and it doesn't make me care at all. I keep just kind of forgetting that he's champion because he doesn't seem to care all that much about being champion. He's just like, whatever, I'm Randy Orton.
But why does it need to be our choice? It's between the two of these guys.
I don't know why this needs to be our choice. It's not a good choice, but this is our choice.
That's me walking up to you and going, Sandra, what would you like today? To be pissed on or shat on? You got a preference?
Right? I mean, like,
neither, to be honest.
I would rather neither, but apparently one of the two has to happen at this point because that's what they've given us. So, I mean, I'm grateful for the non-main event scene. It's another reason why I think I'm so frustrated with Kevin Owens and AJ Styles being all like just America and not an actual story, because I'm someone who can very easily, if the main event scene sucks or if the main event scene isn't interesting to me, I don't even care. It doesn't bother me because I'm like, whatever. I still have AJ Styles, Kevin Owens. I still have Baron Corbin, Sami Zayn. I still have all of these compelling women's feuds. Oh, wait.
But then my feeling and my take on it is that the top titles need to mean something. You know, that's what your show, they are the core of your show. They are the core of people. What are people fighting up the card to get to? What are their main goal? What is their ultimate objective? And I think that the key is that the Jinder Mahal thing, he's had a month to sort of like build up. And the most interesting thing about him is his salsa pals. And
but at least he has them.
At least he has them, to be fair. But like, yeah, I just think that like, his promos are not good. His matches are not good. So, you know, he can barely speak Punjab, which is you know, a problem.
Punjabi, but
Punjabi,
yeah.
Punjabi, if he's, you know, but you know, he can't speak that. So, I mean, it's not like I think he's a good heel. I think he's one of those people that I genuinely think people would, like, the SmackDown ratings have been going down consistently since WrestleMania.
Well, yeah, because SmackDown has not been very good.
Also,
and I think
that
this is a big part of it. Yeah, no, I do. I agree with you. I think that this is a big part of it.
If you're watching SmackDown, if you're like, okay, I've sat and watched Raw, right? I've watched 3 hours, and I'm going to spend 2 more hours of my week on wrestling. And you see this, you just kind of go, nah, I'll maybe just come back to it later. And it's like SmackDown was the show for a long time where, like, Raw was the one that you missed. You know, and Raw was the one that mm-hmm. came out. Oh, I'll come back to that later, but I need to watch SmackDown because that one's really good. So, you know, Jinder has got such a big task ahead of him that I don't envy him on Sunday because There's AJ and Owens, which, you know, take away the fact that their rivalry's not exactly got a lot of... It doesn't feel there's a lot of personal beef there, really. But, you know, they're going to rock it out at Chicago. Sami and Baron, I think, will have a better match than people expect them to. And Nakamura Ziggler should be pretty good. Breezango and the Usos will be fun. The six women match, I'm sure, will be good. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that night, you've got a champion who, like, when he's motivated, he's fucking good. He really is. And that's what's so frustrating with Randy Orton sometimes. He proved it when he was in the Wyatt. See, when he's got something to sink his teeth into and he actually cares, he's very good. But when he
That's the frustrating thing about Randy Orton. And that's, I think, something that David has said too, is that, you know, he is super talented and he is good at wrestling. Like, he is so talented and just slides by on being Randy Orton. And like, that's why he's so frustrating.
I spoke to someone recently who knows gender. And the conversation I had with them was that, the conversation they had with gender was that, you know, it's, the onus is going to be on him to here to make Randy Orton feel like it's, that he needs to get out of his comfort zone. You know, this is going to be, it's like if you go for a job interview, right, and you're going to do a role play with somebody who works there, does the person who works there really feel they need to put in 100% effort to this role play exercise?
No, of course not. No. They already have the job.
But you need to put it in because you're the one that needs to convince people that you belong there. So Jinder Mahal, I think, has a lot bigger of a task ahead of him than people think he does. So I hope... Listen, nothing would please me more... Well, no, I don't really want to eat curry for a month because I've got no spice tolerance, not because I'm racist. But I'd love him to prove me wrong. Listen, Breezango proved me wrong. I thought they were...
See, and I was just going to bring that up. I think that if you want to look to an example of what this could be with a really dynamic performer and someone who really, really grabs the reins. And like I said, I think Jinder's trying and it's working somewhat for me. Like, I am kind of entertained by him at this point and I don't really know why, but whatever. Like, it's something that I'm like, okay, at least it's not Dolph Ziggler. So that's helpful. But Breezango also came from nowhere to get a number one contendership. And Breezango also is up against champions who are sort of compelling, but not, I still don't really understand what the Usos' deal is necessarily. And they haven't really been on TV all that much to build their character or to really say anything. They haven't had the Usos be like beating the Ascension or whoever. I mean, they don't have all that many people to beat at this point, but Breezango have been amazing and super compelling and the crowd is getting behind them and they're like, yeah, we want you to win. And I know it might be a little different because they're the baby faces and so they can do all these outlandish things to get cheered, whereas Jinder wants to be booed as a heel. Maybe they should have had Jinder be the baby face and Randy Orton be the heel, is what I'm saying. And also that Breezango are so much better than Jinder Mahal.
There you go. Sandra, I'm going to ask you for some, if you just have any for us. People do love predictions and they'd love to hear what you think. Just in your gut of either what you want or what you think may happen on Sunday, Ty Dillinger and Aiden English are on the pre-show. Who do you think is going to walk out of Chicago with the victory?
I think it's probably going to be Ty Dillinger because that's what keeps happening. And this one's hard because I'm going to be there, right? And I don't know who to cheer. I want to cheer them both because I love them both so, so much. And I'm tired of, like, Aiden English losing constantly as he's a renewed character kind of bugs me. So I'm a little annoyed that they're doing this match again, even though I love it because I love both of them. I kind of wish that Aiden English could get a win, but I think Ty Dillinger's probably going to win unless they want it to continue, in which case Aiden English might. And that would be awesome, but I think it'll be Ty.
Yeah, I think it'll be Ty too. Do you know my favourite part of SmackDown last night?
What?
Didn't even happen on SmackDown. Eric Rowan. Best thing.
Oh my gosh.
When he popped that balloon with a mask on and Renee shat herself, I laughed so hard.
Because it makes him laugh. And like, he came out with a bag. I was like, what did he kill? What is he presenting to Renee as a sacrifice? Like, we know he thinks Renee is pretty. Because remember that one time, like... Yeah, and he was just, like, pretty, and he, like, had this thing with Renee and whatnot. But, and then all of the different masks in the bag, and he's just, like, man who loves masks now and is super creepy, and I'm so into it.
So he's going to face Luke Harper on Sunday. I'm going to go with my gut and say I think Luke Harper is going to get his win back here. That's my prediction.
I think Luke Harper will get his win back. I wish this meant more. I wish this would have gotten a build on SmackDown, because you know who wasn't on SmackDown this week? And I put this on Twitter. I was like, not on SmackDown, American Alpha, Ty Dillinger, Aiden English, Luke Harper, and I could go on. I mean, Eric Rowan wasn't on SmackDown. Shinsuke Nakamura wasn't technically on SmackDown. I left him off the list just because he was represented and his story was represented. Mm-hmm. But so, like, all the people that I really want to see were not on SmackDown, mm-hmm. which is very frustrating and not the way to get me interested in those characters. But I'm guessing Luke Harper wins and gets his win back. It was so satisfying, finally on Talking Smack, for me to hear Eric Rowan talk about how he felt about Luke Harper leaving the Wyatt family. And I mean, Eric Rowan wasn't around for Randy Orton's mind games. Eric Rowan wasn't around for all of the things that led up to Luke Harper leaving, because I can't blame Luke Harper for leaving, because Bray was clearly treating Randy like the, you know, the chosen one over Luke Harper, who's always been there for him. So, but Eric Rowan wasn't around for that. And Eric Rowan is loyal to Bray Wyatt. So he, you know, he's upset that Luke has left the family and he wants to get revenge on him, or at least take it out on him that he left the family. And he's like, I beat him once, I want to beat him again. So the match got granted. I think that would be a compelling story to tell on SmackDown instead of all of the stupid filler that we've had.
The only one I'm going to defend about not being on SmackDown is American Alpha. Because if you're telling stories about the pay-per-view and they're not on the pay-per-view, fair enough. That's the only one I would say, okay, I see the argument, you know.
No, I get that. That's just more my, you know, sadness at American Alpha being just nothing right now.
Yeah, no, I get it. I just thought that was just a point. But yeah, the rest of them, they should have been on the show. The Rowan thing, actually, like, I remember last year I was kind of like, oh God, these two fighting, like, who cares? And then after this, I was just like, okay, I'm into it now. Yeah.
I just wish we could have actually heard Luke Harper respond to this. I wish they would have started building this story a couple weeks back instead of just throwing them in a nothing match last week and having that be the catalyst for it. Because I think that a Luke Harper, you know, Luke Harper responding and saying why he left the family, and then Eric Rowan saying, yeah, but you left the family, you know, that's not what's supposed to happen here. I think that would have been a compelling story to tell that would have made me a lot more interested in SmackDown rather than Dolph Ziggler talking about Shinsuke again.
So, yeah, I think Luke's going to win the match. Sami Zayn, Baron Corbin. I think Corbs is going to get the victory here, but like you said, I don't think it hurts Sami.
Yeah, I think Corbin will win. If he doesn't, then I'll just be elated in the crowd, but I think it'll be Corbin.
Shinsuke Nakamura against Dolph Ziggler.
Oh boy, I wonder. Kinshasa!
Six women tag match, Naomi, Charlotte, and Becky against Tamina, Carmella, and Natalia, with her in the corner. Sorry. In my head I was like, I can't not do it. Like, it's just,
of course,
ingrained. Anyway, sorry.
Of course. But this one, I don't actually know who wins. I think it could go one of two ways. Either dissension between Naomi and Charlotte will cost them the match and then propel us toward Naomi and Charlotte, or the welcoming, or they beat the welcoming committee, Charlotte gets the pin, and then attacks Naomi afterward.
I think that Charlotte is going to get the pinfall, which will then cause her to either that night or on SmackDown turn back heel and go into a program with Naomi.
Mm-hmm.
Which is my hope. Kevin Owens, AJ Styles for the US title.
I don't know. I don't know on this one at all. Part of me wants to see Kevin Owens retain the U.S. title and continue to make it mean something, but part of me really, really wants this whole Face of America thing to stop so that we can talk about something other than just America in a Kevin Owens feud, because they can be so much more compelling than that. I wouldn't be down on AJ Styles winning the title. I mean, that would make the title seem like a really big deal too, right? And I don't know, but I can't call this one, though, at all. I don't even have a gut feeling.
I think Kevin Owens retains on this one. I don't know why, just a gut.
How good was his line when he said, anything Chris Jericho could do, I could do better, and that includes beating you?
It was good. It was a good line. The Usos defending their SmackDown Tag Team titles against Breezango.
I think the Usos will retain, but I really, 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 really want Breezango to win.
Yep, exactly the same. I think this is going to be one of those ones where the fans are going to be going apeshit for Breezango to win, and they will just come up short.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine if they did. Be good.
Imagine if Breezango wins and then American Alpha turned heel and we could get that.
Wow. I'd be into it.
I'd be into
100%.
It.
100%. So, we get the main event, which is Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal for the WWE Championship. I'm just going to say that one more time, let it sink in. Randy Orton versus Jinder fucking Mahal for the WWE Championship.
Before Jinder stood so tall on SmackDown, I would have chosen Jinder. I think that it will be Orton retaining based on the end of SmackDown.
I think it was a swerve and the Maharaja is going to win it.
I think you might. I kind of hope he does. Just at this point, we're so beyond it being a good story or a good idea for any of this to have happened, because Bray Wyatt should have fucking kept his title and not Randy Orton, that I think I'm just like, well, okay, whatever. At least Jinder would be different, and maybe it will be over soon, and he can just lose it to, like, AJ Styles or something on Tuesday.
God. There would be something great if he wins it, and I'm just, like, the most enraged human on the planet, and then he loses it, like, on Tuesday. That'd be great. Anyway, I guess that's it for now. Sandra and I will be back later on in the week with... what one are we doing next on Patreon? What's next on the list? Is it Lucha or women's wrestling?
I think women's wrestling is next. Cool. And Lucha Underground soon after that. And we're also going to be talking about NXT soon before TakeOver.
We will. We will we'll have that up by Friday over on Patreon. And then, depending on Sandra's schedule, we'll have a TakeOver review up on Patreon on Sunday before Backlash. We might need to get Sandra on her mobile phone while she's traveling somewhere to get it done. But...
It's possible. I'm not sure how timing-wise that's going to work out. I should have time to record before we leave. It also depends if I have to open the store on Sunday morning. I'm not sure yet.
How long is the drive to Chicago?
It's like 3.5 hours.
Okay. They're letting you off to go to
So it's not too far. What?
You're not working. Like, when are you working till on Sunday? Have they got you in, like, for ages?
If I have to work, then it'll be only just till like 1.
Oh, nice. Okay. Go get that Sunday morning liquor.
Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised. Like, people come in. It's weird.
There you go. Sandra, where can people find you on... So you can go to patreon.com/insidetheropes to catch up with all of our content, whether it's retro content or current stuff or interviews. There's tons of stuff on there. You go on that page, it'll tell you on the right-hand side about the exact perks that are available for what price. There you go. Dre Warner had actually said there's so much content on there that you can't actually keep up, which is complimentary, I guess. Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the_ropes.
Have a good week, everybody, and we'll see you for Retro Raw on Friday and for NXT this weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tyler, we love you.
Look over here. Okay, guys. Tyler, please just a photo.
Look, everyone. It's Tyler.
Super good looking, every hair in place, everyone loves this gorgeous face. You can't deny my beauty shot on everything that you are not.